I am an artist living in beautiful Vermont, USA, and I have a lot of questions. So I engage the minds of the people that I meet, poets, writers, artists. I explore what's inside and share it with you. My name is Ricky McEachran, and I am eager to know.
Welcome to Eager to Know. Today I'm excited to have actor, performer, director, sometimes director, Cass Morgan. Welcome to Eager to Know.
Thank you, Rick.
Now, you were a actor on Broadway. You had said that is the primary way that you would describe yourself. How did you get to that? Where did that all start?
I started acting and singing when I was in junior high school. I was tall for my age. I was awkward. I was a loner, what I would call a misfit. That's how I felt. And my best friend was a girl named June Linowitz, and she's still one of my best friends.
Okay.
And she was an artist. She was interested in theater. We were 14. She was involved in a production called The Boyfriend at the Rochester Community Players. This is Rochester, New York. And she kept bugging me to come with her. She said, it's really fun, and you'll have... I kept saying, no, I don't... I don't fit in. And so she finally wore me down, and I went with her one day to a rehearsal of The Boyfriend. And it was in an old church on Meg Street in Rochester. And as I walked in, I took a deep breath, and I just smelled this amazing... I don't know what it was, a combination of painted flats and drapes and costumes and stage makeup from years and years. We're going back a long time. We're going back to the 60s, early 60s. And I just kind of woke up. I thought, where am I? What is this? And everybody was nice, and everyone just accepted me and included me, and I immediately signed on as her assistant properties mistress for the production. She wasn't in it on stage. She was working backstage.
So you signed up for a behind...
Instantly, to just anything I could do to become part of it, because the show was already in progress. I knew that I could sing, and I knew that I was interested in theater, but I hadn't auditioned for it. I didn't, you know, I was just tagging along.
And So up to that point, had you done any singing or acting?
No.
You had not done anything?
No, just in school, in choirs, and in, you know.
Okay.
That's all just...
So what's interesting about that, well, many things that are interesting about it, but the fact that what activated you wasn't necessarily about performing, but it was just the environment.
That's correct.
And the people. I hear that a lot with people that are involved in theater on this podcast. They say that the dynamics and the welcoming and the dynamics are just... something that draws them in.
There's something about the community of theater, and as when we were first talking, you know, a long time ago about this, I mentioned that I thought community theater was an essential part of life.
Yeah.
And it certainly was for me, and I think it is for many reasons. But there's something about that community that is very accepting and welcoming, and everybody's there not because they're going to make a lot of money, not because they're going to be famous. They're there because they want to connect, and they want to tell stories, and they want to have a magical aspect to their life. They want to be involved in something that's not every day, you know, where you're going to different cultures and you're telling stories from hundreds of years ago. You're telling all different kinds of stories. You're learning about how other people think. There's something magical about it. And alchemical about it. And so, and the fact that everybody just, I didn't feel like the awkward kid I felt like in my high school, which had a theater program, actually. Right. But I hadn't really participated in it yet. I was a freshman at high school. I just felt at home and welcome. And so I thought, this is for me.
Now, did you get involved in the theater program in your high school? Once you got activated, so
correct.
To speak.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Yeah. And did that change how you felt about yourself around other kids out in high school? Like, did you still feel awkward and different? Or did that change the way you felt just in theater or elsewhere in high school?
Well, I wound up being good at it and being cast in good roles in the shows that they were doing at school. I wound up having this big voice and being able to sing. And so I got attention from people that would ordinarily have, you know, ignored me.
Yeah.
I was never, like, the popular kid. I was not a cheerleader. I was never into any of that.
Okay.
But I had a kind of a certain cachet that I hadn't had before.
Okay. How did that feel, getting attention?
I never even thought about that before.
Never thought about
before
that.
Before you mentioned it.
Okay.
I just felt like there was a part of me that was being exercised that hadn't ever been exercised.
Right.
So that I felt more whole. I always sang in the choirs, but you're just one of many, which I love. And I still love that experience of the communion that happens singing in a choir. But it wasn't about any of that attention at all. It was about the act of doing it and how good it felt, and that it was something that I was really good at and I could feel good about myself doing it.
Okay. And you had decided, obviously, at some point that this is what you were going to, this was going to be a big part of your life as an adult. And when you made that decision, did you have a goal or a vision for yourself, or were you just like, let me see what happens?
I was more in the let me see what happens, although I always kind of knew that I was going to wind up being on Broadway.
On Broadway.
I just knew that.
Okay. Now, what does that mean? I'm not a theater guy.
Okay.
So what does it mean to be, if you're going to be an actor, actress, you can be in movies, you can be in TV, you can be in theater, and then you can be on Broadway. What does on Broadway mean?
Well,
to a creative person.
It's kind of the pinnacle of live performance. And so there are many ways. There are limited, you know, very artistic, kind of dark shows that you know are not going to be a huge commercial thing. There's that. But then there's the big Broadway musical. There's a lot of different ways to define what a Broadway show is. But for me, the fact that I was a singer and an actress, I'm not a dancer, never have been a dancer.
Okay.
I just saw it. I just knew that I would eventually get there somehow.
And you did.
And I did.
You did. And what was your first Broadway production?
It was Hair.
Okay.
I joined the Broadway cast in 1969, 1970, on the cusp of 69 going to 70.
Okay.
As a replacement, all-purpose female white tribe replacement.
Okay.
That was my title.
Did you have was there a moment or a point where you realized I've made it or a significant milestone where you found out I'm in a Broadway show, you got a phone call or somebody told you that you made it on a Broadway show?
Oh, wow. Well, that was I knew somebody who knew the casting director. Hair had been running for a few years.
Okay.
And, you know, I was living downtown. I was kind of counterculture. I sang a lot. I was writing songs by then. I was playing my guitar and singing with, you know, different little folk groups and stuff. I was not.
And where were you? You're living in the Village?
Yes.
This sounds incredible.
I did all the coffee house. I had the long hair, cowboy boots, long flowing dresses, you know, that whole thing. And so I kind of thought, at that point, I was thinking, well, theater, I still love it, but it's so commercial now.
Right.
It's not for me. I'm an artist. And then somebody I knew said, well, why don't, you know, they're looking for some replacements in Hair on Broadway. I thought, oh, Hair. Well, that's counterculture.
Okay.
And so my boyfriend at the time and his friend and I had been singing together. So they came with me and played guitar, and I sang, come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together. Buffalo Springfield, I guess was their name, their song. And that was what I sang. And then I got a call that I had the job. So it wasn't like the scene in the movie with the girl dancing around on the phone crying to her mother saying, I got it,
right,
I got it. You know,
right.
It wasn't like that. I was like, oh, okay, great.
Right.
And it was an amazing experience being in that show.
Wow.
Amazing on so many levels. We could do an entire episode of your podcast talking about that.
Well, let's plan on doing that.
Because we'll never get to the rest of it if we do it now.
That's okay.
But it was amazing.
Yeah. And then you continued to have other, you know, significant roles. So you became this idea of vision of being successful or being in Broadway. You did it.
I did it. It took me a long time with long hiatuses.
So that is the dream of so many people to accomplish that. Mm-hmm. And you did it. And there's many people that had that dream and it was never realized. Mm-hmm. What in realizing that dream, what was unexpected about it, both good and bad? Because obviously when we think of our dreams, we only think about the good and how it's going to make us feel. Mm. But usually when we accomplish something, there's a lot of other things that come with it.
You know, it's a gradual process. There was never that bolt of lightning and now you're there, you've made it. There was never that. And if you talk to a lot of actors, you'll hear that.
Okay.
There's so many things you have to learn about yourself along the way. It took me a long time. I would say, even after having been part of the team that created Pump Boys and Dinettes, starred in it on Broadway, nominated for a Tony Award for it on Broadway, that probably was the biggest revelation. We did that all ourselves, directed it ourselves. We didn't produce it ourselves, but it was a kind of, we had a wonderful time, and the show was wildly successful.
What was the revelation?
The revelation was, and now what? Deb Monk and I, who were the two dinettes, still couldn't get an agent.
Mm.
Couldn't get an agent. And you need an agent if you're really going to be functioning in that community and be seen by all the different producers and writers that are putting together shows. If you're going to be an entity that people are aware of, you need an agent, pretty much.
Okay.
And we still couldn't get an agent. And so it was a lot of fun, that show, and audiences had a great time. And the word of mouth spread. And so agents did come and see us.
Okay.
And one of them reached out to me. And I've been with that agency ever since 1982.
Okay.
But so that was kind of like, wow, so we're here now and we still can't get anybody to pay attention to us as artists.
Okay.
The revelation also was that once you reach a certain level of something, then that becomes the normal. And then you're kind of like, oh, well, I just hit this. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We might have to edit that out.
That's okay. We won't.
I'll start that again.
This is you get one free table hitting pass.
You reach a certain level of something, and then you realize that that's kind of then it becomes the new normal.
Yeah.
And you think, well, now what?
Yeah.
Now what? Okay, so is this enough money? Not really. We weren't paid that much for doing that. Okay, well, I'd like to try something else, but nobody's paying any attention to me. Okay, and it just kind of was like, all right, now we have to move through this curtain and see what's beyond the next curtain. And it took me how many years after that? Oh, I would say 5 or 6 years after that before I made the decision to really commit to myself. And also, I had children that were growing up and were graduating from high school and going on to college, stuff like that. So I was in my early 40s before I decided that I wanted to focus on myself and what I wanted to do.
What does that mean?
That meant I needed to focus on finding projects. I had agents, but I was always kind of not very committed to, I wasn't committed enough to, you have to be committed inside. You have to, you know, there's a wonderful quote attributed to many, many different philosophers that says once one commits oneself, then the universe collaborates to make it happen.
Yes.
So you have to, I'm misquoting it terribly, but
well,
that's
but,
the
but also there is a, you're vulnerable when you commit, because if you fully commit to something, mm-hmm. then you have to deal with the results. See, if you're
that's right.
If you're only giving half an effort and it's successful, you think I'm great. If it isn't successful, you're like, well, I don't really want it. Mm-hmm. So it's scary to fully commit to something mm-hmm. because it makes you have to deal 100% deal with the mm-hmm. results, as much as any of us are responsible for the results that we get
right.
in our lives.
Well, it's a way of putting oneself out into the world. And when you audition for lots of different people, you know that 75% of the time you're going to be rejected. You know that no matter how good you are.
Yeah.
But if you're not on your game that day, if you're not really right for the material, if you're not what their preconceived idea is, or even if they don't think they have one, there's so many elements that go into whether you're cast
yeah.
in a production or not. And so, but part of our job as actors is to make ourselves joyful no matter what, so that you approach something with the best possible attitude and the most open heart, so that you're ready to, you have to proceed as if it's already yours.
Okay.
You're already doing it. You're already working with these people. So there's a relaxation about that. There's an ability to take them in.
Yeah.
As opposed to just, oh, I hope they like me, I hope they like me, I hope they like
okay.
me. So I had to do a lot of work on myself to get to the place where I felt good enough about who I was
yeah.
and what I had to offer.
Okay.
That I was able to put all of that out there.
Yeah.
And then amazingly things started to really move, and I started working a lot all through my later 40s and 50s and into my 60s. I worked constantly.
Nice. Now, when you were working, well, through all of this time,
yeah.
I assume you would have considered yourself part of like this subculture, this
mm-hmm.
world of theater,
mm-hmm.
which I know nothing about. What? How would you describe that world? All of the people, are you working and hanging out with just actors? Are you hanging out with directors and mm-hmm. musicians? Is it, you know, is it just people that are in the theater world that you would spend your time with?
Kinda. Because that's who you see every day.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked pretty consistently for a long time.
Mm.
And in fact, this past week, I went to two significant birthday parties in New York, and that's who was there.
Mm.
One was a smaller group, but all people that I know through the person whose party it was is a magnificent writer, playwright, and screenwriter, and so it's through him that I know all of these other people that were there. And we all would say the same thing. That's how we knew each other. And then on Monday night, an actress friend, her party, and so it was maybe 70 people were there, all New York theater artists.
Now, do you feel most comfortable in that environment in the same way that you felt mm-hmm. this sense of comfort when you went to that theater in Rochester for the first time?
Huh.
Is it, you know, you're like, oh, I'm with my people.
Yeah, I do. Because that's the truth.
Yeah.
The truth. You all kind of, you have a common history.
Yeah, and probably language.
You've all seen, yeah, and you've all seen each other in all kinds of shows.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it just builds a history. There's a history and an ease of talking to each other, and you've mm-hmm. laughed. One of the great things about being in the theater is that you laugh a lot.
Right.
You laugh all the time.
Right.
Even if it's not a comedy. I don't know, people are funny and
right.
it helps. I think laughter is a wonderful release for all kinds of things
oh,
too.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
You just, there's a camaraderie. And when you spend, I mean, I've done three or four shows where I did the same show for a year and a half. So you're a year and a half in the same dressing room with with another person, or at the, in the same green room, or at the same, you know, between shows dinner, or, you know, you get to know everything about these people. You know about their kids, you know about their losses, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so.
One of the big questions I have is, if you're on doing a Broadway show, you are doing 8 performances a week. Mm-hmm. How the idea of maintaining that level of, I don't know if intensity is the word, but keeping it fresh. I mean, I guess that's why you're a professional. That seems impossible to me, to be able to do the same thing eight times a week. And in some cases, it's a significant role. How, I guess that's the training.
Well, you just, I don't know. It's just what we do. There's a freedom in knowing a script so well, and knowing a song so well, and knowing a scene so well, that it's almost like putting on familiar clothing.
Okay.
And so then you're free to do whatever you want to do in that outfit, in those clothes. And it may seem like you have you'll say to somebody after the show, "Wow, that scene was so much fun tonight. Did you notice?" And they'll say, "I didn't really notice it was that different," or the audience never knows that it's different, but it feels
like
different.
So you can experience it in new ways
every time.
That's so interesting.
You absolutely do. And I have, like I just said, been in shows that I've done for a year and a half, and you see like a week's coming. Oh my God. And then you can't wait to get out. You have 8 more shows. Oh, my God, can I make it? And then something starts to happen, and you start seeing things. This has happened to me so many times.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my, I never thought of that before. Something will occur to you on stage, and you'll have a fresh key into something. I don't understand what that is, but...
I don't think you have to.
That is what makes it a real joy to do, is that you keep finding new nuance.
Great. Well, Cass, thank you so much for hanging out with me here on Eager to Know.
Mm-hmm.
It was great getting to know you in a new way, and I'm sure we'll be seeing each other out and about at a village cookout or something.
I hope so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
My name is Ricky McEachran, and you have been listening to Eager to Know, the podcast. If you haven't already, please go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Eager to Know podcast.